news, sports, weather from Dr. Bill Williams, traffic info from Kane, and one of the Gulf Coast's most familiar voices. It's Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Arwig.
Good morning, y'all. It is 7 minutes after 8 o'clock. Dr. Bill promises that things are going to slowly get better from all the rain we've been having. And a lot of that rain recently has been in Baldwin County and the Florida Panhandle more than here in Mobile County. Just kind of worked out that way. That's where the pattern's gone. And so we're going to see that drift off to the east here, partly cloudy today. And then through the weekend, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, things look really good.
Clearing up. Yep. That's right. Maybe one of the last warm weekends of the year.
Could be. Could be. 7 after 8 o'clock, FM Talk 106.5. In a few weeks, October the 26th is going to be a big event. And here to tell us all about it is the president of the University of Mobile, Dr. Lottie Burnett. Dr. Burnett, good morning to you. I know you're excited about what's happening on the 26th of October.
Good morning, guys. Good to be with you again. We are very excited. This is the first speaker I've got to pick. This is my third year as president, and this is the guy I wanted. He's kind of a boyhood hero of mine, Archie Manning, a legend when I was a kid. I mean, I don't want to make him feel old, but when I was 13, he was a NFL, already a college legend in the NFL, so I'm very excited about this event.
Yeah, this guy's done a pretty good job raising some kids,
yeah,
too.
I was going to say, yeah, for all he's done in his life, he will go down really as just the father of Peyton and Eli, mm-hmm. I think.
Yeah, that's what's funny to our students. You know, they think of him as Peyton's dad, Cooper, Eli, but, you know, folks my age and maybe Dan's age, he was a legend himself mm-hmm. in college back in the late 60s, early 70s. I mean, he came out of college as a legend himself, Archie did.
Yeah, it's not just so much how the numbers he produced in college. I think he had like a 400-yard passing game against Alabama on a national TV stage back in like 1969.
Right.
But it's the way he played, Lonnie, like reckless abandon and escaped. He was like the best version ever of Bo Nix. he won a lot of games.
69 is fascinating because he lost that game to Bama 33-32 to Scott Hunter, who lived down the street from me when I was growing up in Pritchard. But that was the first primetime televised college football game, and it was a classic right away.
It really, really was.
That's awesome. And so Archie, you know, Southern boy, mm-hmm. Born and raised in the South, but so successful through his career and then raising his children. That means he's like the perfect guy to get for this scholarship banquet to hear what he has to say.
Yeah, I think you touched on this. It's not just his athletic ability. He's just, to me, the epitome of class, the way he's conducted himself. And he played for the Saints, which, to be frank, they were not good teams around mm-hmm. him, but never complained, always played with grace, with dignity, raised his family, never a scandal. I mean, he is a role model, I think, to young people today. Even today, I think he's a great role model.
Yeah, I guess it was the Book of Manning was at the ESPN special mm-hmm. that chronicled the three of them. You know, Cooper as well. Cooper suffered, he's had some sort of illness that knocked
him
out of, out of football. He was a good, really good wide receiver, and he was the oldest of all three. If you had a chance to sit down, maybe you will have a chance to sit down with him. Lonnie, since he was a hero of yours, what would you ask Archie Manning?
Well, that's a good question, and I will sit down with him that night at dinner. But that game in 69 fascinates me. I want to talk about that, but I will actually pull out my 1971 rookie card and get him to sign it because I've got that here on my desk.
Wow.
I'm looking at it right now. So I'll be the typical fan of that night, probably starstruck as a fan. But just, the way he's been successful in business is just he's turned his athletic career into so much more over the years. That's what fascinates me. His family, you know, now his grandson, Arch, might be the best of all I'm hearing as far as talent. But I want to talk about his career and his family, things like that.
And Dr. Burnett, I think maybe this will be your chance to recruit Arch to come to UM to play some baseball, maybe down the road. Maybe that would be the steal of the century.
Like, nobody saw this coming.
Yeah.
Arch is going to the University of Mobile to play baseball.
Yeah, so
that'd be a good headline.
This banquet raises money and provides scholarships for University of Mobile. It's a big event every year, but this is outstanding. Archie Manning coming to town and will speak that night, October 26th. How can folks get some tickets and show up?
Well, you can still get single tickets. It's been so successful, we've actually had to move to the bigger venue downstairs at the convention center. There's still individual tickets. They can call 442-2913, our advancement office, for individual tickets. But we've literally sold out the table sponsorship,
wow.
which is a great thing to do. But there are some individual tickets still left.
And you can also go to umobile.edu/banquet. Now, in my commercial copy, what it says is there's a few table sponsors left. I'm going to have to edit that out because Dr. Yeah. Barnett.
They were actually sold yesterday, I believe.
Gone.
There's been such a demand for these tickets. It's been an amazing thing because I was amazed, but not surprised, really, at the popularity of Archie Manning. But this has been a very big seller for us.
You know, I saw him speak a number of years ago at the Country Club of Mobile. I think Joe Bullard brought him to town for... might have been a St. Jude fundraiser, and he's a wonderful speaker, Dr. Barnett. You're really going to enjoy him. Also, talk about how things are going at the University of Mobile right now. We talked a year ago, or maybe it was sooner, but we talked about, obviously, COVID's been something that we've all been dealing with, and certainly educators have as well. What's the state of health at the university right now?
Well, we're doing very well, Dan. Thanks for asking. We're going wide open. We came back, on campus, fully on ground in classes and activities. We just had homecoming last week, a big outdoor concert, hot air balloons, all kind of stuff going on. So it looks very normal activity-wise. We're still, of course, watching for cases, for quarantines, things like this. But we've been blessed. There was an early spike when we first came back in August, but the numbers have gone down, which I think is true across the state and across the South. Even right now, they're declining. So we're in a very good place, I believe, right now as far as COVID is concerned.
That's good. Good to hear.
Yeah, that's good to hear.
And also, you got the scholarship banquet, but coming up, something that I've heard a lot about. I still need to make my way out there. The Christmas Spectacular coming up in November. Dan's been practicing. I think his voice is just about perfect. I think you're going to have him singing that this year.
I tell you what, this is no joke. It is such a great show, and it's the name is actually accurate.
Yeah, spectacular.
It is.
It's spectacular. Talk about that, Dr. Burnett.
Well, that is a major event. That'll be November the 18th through 21st. We do it five times in 4 days at Cottage Hill Baptist Church, sold out each night. Matter of fact, tickets went on sale this past weekend. They sold $24,000 worth in the first 2 days. So the demand is already there. Get your tickets now for that event. That's a major event. I would pay to see Dan sing. I'd pay extra to it, I believe. If he were on stage. But that's an event you don't want to miss. It's kind of the kickoff to the Christmas season. It takes place before Thanksgiving on purpose. It's the kickoff. It is a major event. If you've not seen it, that's a must here in Mobile.
I agree. And talk about a little bit about the scholarship money that is raised at this banquet and who that goes to.
Yes, the proceeds from the banquet go to student scholarships. Our students depend on scholarships and grants, federal grants, private scholarships, things like that. This goes to students. You're investing in our students here, which is a great thing to invest in, obviously, but the money raised will support student scholarships.
I just want to thank you as a board member of Light of the Village. I don't think that John Eads and Dolores and the staff out there, which is made up primarily of University of Mobile alum, and just the students who give their time on a volunteer basis throughout the school year, throughout the summer, I don't think we could operate in any sort of same form or fashion without the University of Mobile and the time you give to the Light of the Village.
Well, that's important. We try to teach service. As a matter of fact, we'll be doing Project Serve, our 10th anniversary Project Serve, in a couple of weeks. So, we try to instill the best in academics, but also service. If we can teach kids to serve, we've done a good day's work.
Dr. Burnett, again, the number, if they want to call for those scattered tickets that are out there for the Archie Manning banquet, what's that number?
That's 442-2913. That'll be the advancement office.
Sounds good. Dr. Burnett, thanks for your time this morning. Lonnie, and we'll talk soon, and I'll get my pipes ready. I'll sound like a BG in a couple of weeks.
I'm counting on that. Thank you, guys. Right,
thank you now.
All right, Dr. Lonnie Burnett, University of Mobile. Some great stuff coming up there, including Dan singing Little Drummer Boy.
On the way.
Now on the way.
It's 16 after 8 o'clock, FM Talk 106.5, Dan and Dalton, and maybe a little talk about the city council on the way. Good morning from Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5 at 8:21. Jeff Ford is going to join us before the Jeff Ford show, so about 10 minutes till 9 o'clock. We'll shoot the breeze with Jeff Ford, find out what his guest list looks like today. We'll also talk about city council a little bit, the elections yesterday, how that forms what is now, beginning November the 1st, going to be the Mobile City Council. Ramifications of the runoff elections yesterday. Quickly to the phone lines, real quick.
Yeah, let's talk to Jay. Jay, good morning.
Good morning. I just wanted to say I enjoyed listening to the president of the University of Mobile. I thought that was a great call. And I just want to say that Archie Manning probably is the biggest stud in American history.
Oh.
I know nobody else who has put two sons in the NFL to become all-pro quarterbacks. And the truth of the matter is, you know, if he's probably, if he was a racehorse, he'd be priceless.
But, you know, I think I've heard that comparison before, and you're right about that.
Well, I want to say this, too. Well, Archie Manning probably was a better quarterback than either one of his sons.
You think so?
And the yes, I do. And the reason is he played on literally one of the worst NFL teams in history. Mm. When I was a little boy, I used to think that if the University of Alabama had played the Saints, they would have beaten the Saints. And I am 52 years old, and many times I think they would have beat the Saints today, and I'm 52, and I'm going to explain why. Because Alabama was a team. The Saints were more like a mob.
Mm-hmm.
And when an army fights a mob, the army will normally win. Archie Manning is what held that team together for years. He could do something that his sons really couldn't do, run.
Yeah,
and he had to.
Yes, he did. That's a very good point.
Yeah.
And he was greatly underestimated, and he probably should be in the NFL Hall of Fame, if not for a player, certainly for his contribution as a stud.
Yeah, well, and stud in, quite literally in that sense.
Yeah, well said, Jay. Appreciate that a lot.
Yeah, I'm, one more thing on this Archie Manning thing, because I didn't watch him live, but his record as a starter in the NFL, 35 wins, 101 losses, three ties. Mm. Never played in the playoffs, never had a winning record. That's how bad his teams were.
Yeah, he was drafted so high because, where did he fall in that draft? Let's get around to that.
Second overall, 1971,
There you go. So the Saints were the second overall worst team and refused to get better even with Archie Manning.
Unbelievable.
It's 823 at FM Talk 106.5. Got Mobile City Council elections yesterday, those runoff elections, and among those now going to be in, beginning November the 1st, is William Carroll, and he won despite some outside push, but some outside money was trying to influence that election. Carroll won anyway, and he talked about that.
A lot of people were upset today about outside influences in the city of Mobile, trying to, solicit support for something that may allude to another issue out there. Feels good. It's sort of like David and Goliath. What I mean?
He beat more than an opponent. Now, of course, Levon Manzi had passed away.
Right.
But then you had this push from some political groups outside of Mobile that were trying to create a brand new election that would have cost $130,000 to the city of Mobile.
That's right.
And but that way, evidently, somebody that they wanted to get elected was going to emerge out of the shadows, mm-hmm. the political shadows, and they were going to push them to get that. And it's probably all came down to annexation.
Well, that push, it almost worked. There were 1,100 votes for Manzi and 1,464 for mm-hmm. Carroll, which worked out to about 57% of the vote. So, in a normal race with two living candidates, 57% to 43% is a blowout. But when you're talking about one who mm-hmm. passed away 2 weeks ago, to get 43% of the vote, that's something else.
No kidding. Scott Jones, who was also a winner yesterday, he won District 6 over Josh Woods. Pretty good race, though. But Jones looks like he's going to be somebody who wants to work with Mayor Sandy Stimson and not be somebody that's a thorn in his side.
It's been a long 6 months. And then I'll start figuring out, what is the first story? That's up to the mayor. This is the mayor's administration. And, I think in conjunction with that, honestly, we've got to get the pieces of this city council put together.
That's kind of a shift from the rhetoric of some of the other city council people who some would feel like Sandy Stimson treated the mayor's office like a king and always wanted to bring him back down and said, no, the council runs this town. You happen to be the mayor, but we represent the people.
I'm interested to see how Scott Jones, how he votes, right? Because he replaced Best Rich, who's traditionally voted no on a lot of things.
No vote. And that's unusual to me that he would come out that way, and Best gave him her
endorsement.
Endorsement. Right.
And with Best Rich, and that's not a bad thing mm-hmm. to vote no on a lot of things. Actually, a lot of people feel that way. You really got to, work for that vote. But will Scott Jones maybe be a little more easier to work with.
Amicable.
Amicable, thank you.
It sound, well, you know, the first thing he said, it would give you that impression.
And then you mentioned District 1, and we were talking about this race a lot, but Corey Penn ends up beating Herman Thomas. I think that was probably the largest margin of victory, if I'm – yeah, it was 59% for Corey Penn. And, of course, that means Herman Thomas got 41% of the vote there. But you mentioned the turnout, and while the general election earlier with all seven districts voting and the mayor's race, there were, like, what, 30,000 people that turned out to vote for that?
Yeah, 34,000 back a couple of months ago in August.
And then 7,000 made their way through the polls yesterday for the three district runoff races. So, actually, even though that is a low turnout, you compare it to the 34,000 for the seven districts in the mayor's race, that's not as low a number as I kind of expected. I thought even fewer would turn out yesterday.
So I've reached out to William Carroll. I think at some point here real soon we'll get him on Mobile Mornings and get an idea of, you know, that he's somebody who's already been in that office. He was, I think, a two-time council person in district.
Was it District 2 then? I think it was.
Yeah, that could have shifted a little bit, but I believe it was. Yeah, so William Carroll back in office, but he's you know, Scott Jones, brand new to the office. Corey Penn, brand new to the office. William Carroll, not the same. Understands a lot more about how the game is played. Maybe we can get his thoughts on a number of things, including crime in the city and annexation. And what he's thinking about that.
And, of course, the fourth new face didn't have to go through the runoff. That's Ben Reynolds, who had the endorsement of John Williams and then ended up winning District 4 going away. So that leaves us with three incumbent city council members. You have C.J. Small, Joel Daves, and Gina Gregory. And it'll be interesting. I'm looking forward to, I guess, the first city council meeting will be in November because this current term ends at the end of this month. So maybe we're looking at November 2nd. Maybe being the first new city council meeting, I think we'll get to know more about these candidates then. And there has to be some news on an annexation vote coming soon after that.
And also, it's kind of gotten swept away as far as the attention to this, but the late LaVon Manzi's mother was going to take his council seat for the rest of the term. That council seat is still open.
Right.
What does Mayor Stimson plan on doing with that council seat in between now and the end of this month?
Right, because you have three lame ducks in the city council, and you also have the unfilled seat, which leaves you with six votes. So, yeah, that'll be interesting. I wonder if they'll try to pass anything here in this last month of the term.
Yeah, I don't know. And I don't know that he needs to or is going to pursue any answer to who sits in the council seat of LaVon Manzi here for the next, I guess,
25 days.
Okay, so anyway, there's a look at the council. After 8:30, what are you cooking up there?
So one of our big stories this morning is about Merrick Garland and basically sicking the FBI on some of these school board meetings. So a big school board union has likened some of these parents at these school board meetings to domestic terrorists and say they're a real threat. So now the feds have gotten involved. There's been obviously a lot of pushback on that early on. We'll talk about that when we get back. Plus, the backlog in murder cases that haven't been heard in Mobile, unreal.
Disturbing. A lot of dangerous folks out there, y'all. Be careful. 830 FM Talk 1065.
FM Talk 106.5 and Mobile Mornings. Halfway through the week, it is Wednesday, I believe. It's time to head to McConnell Automotive and talk with Louis Arata. Hey, Louis.
Good morning, guys. How are you?
Doing great. You know, the weather will be cooling down here before too long. Folks will be headed out into the woods, and you got the vehicle for hunting or whatever else you may be doing out there.
That's right. We got some four-wheel drive trucks here. I'm sitting here looking at them right now, getting them all cleaned up, dolled up. We're going to be here all day today. Hopefully this rain holds off. And if it doesn't hold off, you can check us all out online at McConnellAutomotive.com. Check out all the stuff we got coming in. We've got a lot of trucks coming in. And if you want to put a deposit on it, like a lot of people are doing, just contact one of our sales representatives over the new car side, and they'll tell you what's coming in. They've got a list. And put a deposit on it, the shares when it gets here. It's just easy.
Very cool. Also, trades, and you'll buy the car outright from some people.
That's right. We will buy your car. Call Gene or I, 251-476-4141. Give us a VIN and the miles, and we'll give you a price right over the telephone.
All right. We appreciate it, Louie.
Thank you.
That's Louie Arata. Go see him at McConnell Automotive, Dauphin Street, just east of I-65, and online, McConnellAutomotive.com.
You got Georgia and Auburn this week. It's going to be big, big, big game on the Plains. Bo Nix, after his miraculous performance against LSU and their comeback victory. So Auburn people are excited about that for sure, and you should be. We've got Tiger Talk that's going to be on FM Talk 106.5 on Thursday from 6 to 7. That's the syndicated show out of Auburn. And after that, must I tell you more?
OT.
Tiger Talk OT. We go out to Voodoo Wing Company, and Mike's a super dude. He's a great host. You got Fairhope Storm head coach Fred C. Riley. His wife Susan's going to be there. Georgia Broadcaster of the Year Lee Baby makes an appearance.
Oh, he's great.
He may not be there the whole time. You know, he's in and out. Chuck the Friendly Engineer, witchcraft enthusiast Leanna and Darlene. Talk to them a little bit.
Yeah.
See if you can sleep that night. former Miss Arkansas Lauren Cabanis is going to be there. Dalton Orwig, Sean Sullivan, and, of course, the star of the show, Doug Holton.
Wow.
A lot of star power.
I mean, I have to be there, but you're making me want to be there.
Exactly. So join us out there. Voodoo Wings are there basically at the corner of Old Shell and University, across from the university, right here in Mobile.
Very cool. Hey, you know, one of our big stories this morning is receiving attention, at least on the right, and the when you're looking at the political aisle, Merrick Garland. And I think if you ask me one thing, if you ask me for one word about the Biden administration as we are, 9 months into the term here, 10 months in, I would say overreach. And there's so many things that they are, so many crises that they're trying to, you know, avoid or get away from right now, whether it's Afghanistan or the COVID numbers, which rose during his administration, what have you. But overreach, the border, but overreach is, I think, the name of the game for this administration. And now possibly getting the FBI involved in something that has traditionally been handled on a local level, or at the most a statewide level, and that's some of these parent-teacher school board meetings. And we've reported over the last, over the last year, since kind of the lockdowns began and then mandates in some of these schools, some of the talk about what may be being taught at some of our schools, this critical race theory stuff, and some of these school board meetings have gotten, you know, pretty animated, and sometimes violence has happened. The things that I really hate seeing are when outside of these school board meetings, you have parents and other people kind of go to the private residences of some of these people who work on these school boards.
Not cool.
I think that's not cool. Just like, you know, following cinema into the bathroom was not cool the other day. You know, kind of fair on both sides on that point. But to bring the FBI into some of these, the real issue, when you look at the memo that was sent by Attorney General Merrick Garland, is something that, you know, we've seen a lot with this administration, and that's kind of the gray area in the things that they talk about, the reasoning behind some of the moves that have been made. In the memo, Garland said, and let me see if I can find the exact quote I'm talking about here. He said Garland said the enforcement is needed due to a disturbing spike in harassment, intimidation, and threats of violence against school administrators, board members, teachers, and staff. He said, While spirited debate about policy matters is protected under our Constitution, that protection does not extend to threats of violence or efforts to intimidate individuals based on their views. So the threats of violence is one thing, and I think most of the time it's pretty clear when there's a threat of violence. Somebody says, I'm going to do this to you, or watch out on this date.
Watch your back.
This is going to happen. Watch your back. But that second part that he says here, the reasoning behind getting the FBI involved – efforts to intimidate individuals based on their views. At that point, you're getting awfully close to, you know, the thought crimes that we've discussed in the past. And so basically that's such a gray area and such a wide loophole that I think that would give the FBI cause and the direction under the AG, Merrick Garland, to whether it's someone who is anti-mask or anti-vaccine or anti-critical race theory, that would be the opposing views, right? That would be the so where does the intimidation come from? What's the line for intimidation? When does someone become not just speaking their mind but intimidating people with opposing views?
Is it what they say? Is it the way they say it? You and I haven't been in any of these meetings. We've seen them all. The videos have gone viral. You've got people, a lot of emotion involved. People are very angry. People are very, they've got probably a good reason, or certainly they feel they've got the right reason to be angry about some of these mandates. Some of the things are going to be taught in school for their children, that they have every right to question the curriculum. But we haven't been there, so we haven't seen these real incidents in proper context. We've seen little 8-second clips and all that, you know.
Nah.
And we always know that there's a backstory to all those. So not being there, I can't say that that there's not reason to be concerned, I guess. But it just feels a little bit like it's the school boards, the entire school board union of America, right?
So yeah, it's the National School Boards Association.
Yeah, the association. It just feels a little bit like they know that if they cry to this administration, mm-hmm. they're going to get attention.
Yeah,
it's almost like he hit me first.
Right.
It seems like a little bit of a crybaby.
It does, and I think it shows you who now. What is the most powerful union in the United States now? You would think maybe the post office, they've got a pretty strong mm-hmm. union. I don't know, the list of the unions that are around, but look at what's happened in this past couple months alone with the teachers' union, mm-hmm. whatever the national arm of that is. Basically, they got the CDC, you might remember this, the teachers' union was able to make the CDC rewrite the rules for schooling and for mask wearing.
CDC is supposed to be all about follow the medicine,
right?
And they got them politically to change policies, that deal with your health, or poor health. And that's again when the CDC says to us, "Hey, look, we're just looking out for you. We're looking." Well, really? Because if you've changed the words in your policy because mm-hmm. of political pressure, I'm going to lose some faith in that.
And I think there's, especially with the people at the top of these unions, they're obviously pretty far left in their politics. And as much as this administration and people try to act like critical race theory isn't a thing, they keep saying, oh, that's just taught in like the highest levels of law school, this critical race theory. The actual evidence, points to the opposite, mm-hmm. that there are plenty of teachers out there teaching this critical race theory, which we've been over before, and you probably know at this point, the critical race theory way of thinking is basically to separate people based on their race mm-hmm. or ability or gender, and then basically the wrongs that have been done to your people or your race or your kind in the past, that you're owed something in the present because of that, and that if you're, a straight white person, cisgendered, as they'd say, then you are at the top of the totem pole just because of your skin and your race.
I think you just offended somebody with the totem pole.
I might have. So it actually teaches people to divide based on race. And that is going on in schools around America as much as they try to say it isn't. But now with the FBI getting involved, they're saying they're going to send them in because of the false accusations about critical race theory. What's happening are these school board members are seeing what's happening, the school board union, they're seeing what's happening around the nation, and the parents are teed off. They don't like what's happening at all. And I think in a lot of instances where this is handled on the local level, whether it's a sheriff's office or local police who are supposed to be kind of keeping things calm in these situations, I feel like a lot of time these police feel the same way as the parents do. So they're letting them speak their mind. And unless you're in one of these places that are dragging people out for not wearing masks, most of these aren't violent, right? Most of these things don't rise to violence.
They're angry.
They're angry.
And if you're afraid of anger, that's your problem.
And that's what the board is afraid of. They're afraid of anger because it would change the way that things are taught, this big union. So they have to get the feds involved because the local police aren't doing their bidding for them.
Help me, please. Help me, please. He's picking on me. 846 FM Talk 106.5, Dan Brennan, Dalton Norwig. We will chat with Jeff Poore, see what he's got coming up on his show right around the corner on Mobile Mornings. FM Talk 106.5 at 850. Dan and Dalton and Mobile Mornings. About to wrap it up here. Transition to the Jeff Poor Show. So we do that with Jeff here in studio to tell us what's going on today. Jeff, what you got cooking?
Well, yeah, Scott Buttram, regular on this program. We're going to talk about coming out of a special session and the unfortunate timing of an officer-involved shooting killed in the line of duty in the Shoals. But there's a lot of I don't know if remorse is the right word, but at least a little bit of righteous indignation from some lawmakers that opposed a lot of these, so-called criminal justice reform measures.
Yeah, sentencing policies that Attorney General Marshall was talking
about
yesterday.
You heard yesterday, yeah, right. Yeah. And so Connie Rose coming up on the program as well, but I'm kind of looking at this now. How much of a setback was that for the pro-sentencing reform, pro-criminal justice reform people? Because if you remember, what really kind of put all this in motion initially was the parolee out in Marshall County, Jimmy O'Neill Spencer, goes on a killing spree out on parole, should have never been out. And that they said, well, we gotta look structurally, what's wrong with the Board of Pardons and Paroles? How does somebody like this get out? Does the same thing apply here? What are the politics? I think it'd be really as free-willing as, like, Chris England and some of the other Democrats want to see. But we'll talk to both Scott and Connie about that. Also, at 11 o'clock hour, Richie Horton. He's a member of the legislature from Owens Crossroads, just to the south of Huntsville. And he's got a bill that wants to protect individuals from employee vaccine mandates. Mm-hmm. He wants to make those. Like, we're going to walk through that. And, you know, there's a fine line here, because do you really want to regulate businesses to that degree, or, you know, do you respect the autonomy of an individual to make decisions? So that's the discussion we're going to have in it, as we do every Wednesday. Sean Ross from SR Communications will be with us.
Very cool. Very cool. Yeah. Looking forward to that. You know, we were discussing in this last segment, Jeff, Merrick Garland and the memo he sent to the FBI and some others on Monday night regarding these school board meetings, right, which we've talked about over the months with all these mandates and the lockdowns and how crazy things have gotten. Some of the texts we've gotten here, this texter says, when you mess with people's kids, you can't get any more personal. Most people would do anything to protect their kids. CRT, which is critical race theory, this person claims, they say it's here even in Baldwin County. My elementary school child was given at the end of the last year, on the last day of school, a packet of magazines that was filled with CRT propaganda. It was shocking to me to realize this was a real thing that people believe. It was all very racist. And we're still seeing the Biden administration, maybe their two biggest lies going right now, although it's a heck of a list to make the top of, is that this big spending plan is free, that it'll cost everyone $0, and that CRT is only happening in the highest levels of law school. It's not actually being something that's taught in our public schools.
Well, I think we throw around the CRT. You know, what seems to be the definition of that as applied by the left, and that you only talk about it in law school and grad school or whatever, versus the 1619 Project. When we say that as a form of critical race theory being taught in public schools, it clearly is being taught in public schools. So we need to define these terms, and we're talking past each other about this, that you know, we are teaching critical race theory in schools, but the textbook definition of the original critical race theory, we're only teaching at the highest levels. So I think that's where we're playing games with the words here.
Yeah, yeah. You hear that all the time, and then it's hard to drill down to the truth when everybody's playing this game of passwords back and forth, like wink, wink. You know what I mean? Like, no, I don't know what you mean. What the hell do you mean?
It's a buzzword that triggers people.
Right. Exactly.
And you know, the right's gotten really smart at using. Hey, they're teaching critical race theory, mm-hmm. and that draws out people. But I think with this effort by the DOJ, I think it's about a trying to put in a chilling effect on protesters at public schools. I don't know if it's actionable. I don't know if they're really going to act on it. But if somebody, like somebody's mom, she says, well, I don't want men with guns and badges showing up at my house with the federal government. I'm going to back off of my protesting. I think that's exactly what's going on here with that.
Well, you start with the rally in Charlotte a few years ago, and then fast forward to January 6th, and then domestic terrorist, they decided, was the number one
issue in America, or these homegrown domestic terrorists. And now we're seeing that definition kind of expanding into parents speaking out at school board meetings.
I mean, that's just what Jeff was saying, weaponizing these terms, turning them into something, applying it where it doesn't apply.
Right.
You know, Ashley says maybe the thought police should make sure that the students can read and write and add one-on-one and worry about and rather than to worry about upset parents. But I guess so. She's just basically let's get our scores up before we start teaching on such a level like critical race theory.
But one thing I would say, though, and people, you know, the left will push back against the right for saying, hey, all these, you know, we have a member of legislature come on and say, hey, no critical race theory here, whatever. Why are you doing that? It's only taught in grad school at the most elite institutions. But they are responding to something that the constituents care about. So never really fault, you know, some of these politicians for doing that. They're just, that's how our system works. They respond to a constituent concern. Mm-hmm. If it's not a concern in their mind, but they're still responding to it, then that's sort of how this works, right?
So reminds me of the yoga thing.
Right. Well,
right?
Explain
that real quick. Like the yoga thing, people would think that's ridiculous that anyone would vote out yoga in the state of Alabama. But
it's a, you know, Eastern mysticism or whatever. But that is a concern for people, whether we like it or not. We think it's silly. There are people in the state who go to their member of the legislature and say, hey, I don't want this taught to my child. Mm-hmm. And that they do believe it is tied to another religion. That's what we do. That's why we elect and send these people, and we can mock it and laugh at it all you want. But everybody, even AOC, all the way to the most right wingy, Mo Brooks or whatever, they represent a constituency, and that's how our system's supposed to work.
Yeah, when I was 9, I wrote a letter to my congressman to get Billy Blanks and Tybo out of the school. You know, the little workout videos they made us do during recess. Really quickly, just a minute left here, but something we haven't talked a whole lot about, and I know you've had him on the show. How about Tommy Tuberville? I've got to tell you, I've been impressed with his time already as a senator. I wasn't sure really what to expect with him going into office. I was probably a little more critical of him than I should have been. But as far as representing his constituency, he's doing a pretty dang good job.
I tell you what, I got to know Senator Tuberville on the campaign trail really well. I knew this was going to happen. I knew he was doing what he had to do to get elected and saying things that seemed bombastic and outlandish. And then he would talk to you behind the scene like a normal, you know, he would, but you knew he's going to get up to the Senate and he's going to go on to get along and he's going to be, you know, slapping Mitch McConnell on the back or whatever. And that is how he is going to, he's that kind of an operator.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I've been impressed, got to say.
Tommy Tuberville, U.S. Senator, and I guess he took office in January right before the the party at the Capitol. It's 8:59. Jeff Poore, thanks, buddy.
Thanks for having me on.
He's on the way next. FM Talk 106.5. Dan and Dalton, goodbye for today. Back with you tomorrow beginning at 6 a.m. on FM Talk 106.5.